morning, good morning, good morning. Welcome again to News My Fiance with Morgan Jones and DJ Ambush. This morning, I am solo. I am flying solo this morning. If there's any of our fiancés out there that deal with migraines, that are affected by barometric pressure, you too, I wish you a better morning than what you're having right now. That's a lot of what MJ is dealing with right now this morning. And it was rough. It was rough on our lady. So rough. Dressed, almost made it to the door. And you know how it is, man. The barometric pressure sets it off. But then it can be so many different things. Sounds, light, touch, so many different things that just continue to just ring those bells for you all out there suffering with migraines. So definitely, my heart goes out to you guys. MJ says she loves you. She's sad she couldn't come in and do the show this morning. But, you know, she'll be here on YouTube Monday night. We'll be back at it. So shout out to MJ and everyone dealing with migraines in the Pacific Northwest right now due to weather. Shout out to Dibs, too. Thanks for checking in. There's a little break in the radio broadcast this morning. Dibs was on it. So shout out to you, Dibs. Thank you for that. Thank you. But again, yeah, welcome to News of My Fiance. Today, what we are covering in local news, records reveal labor leaders behind the scenes played a role in Portland Council leadership fight. So it's a new occurrence, but it's not a new thing in the way that industry leaders in our community in Portland, much like anywhere else, you know, they cannot resist placing their thumb on people that hold positions of power. They cannot resist trying to influence our civic leaders. So it's just another case of that. I believe last time it was Dan Ryan. This time it's Loretta Smith. So, yeah. So that's in local news. In national news, if you haven't heard, there's been a watchdog report scrutinizing the Pentagon's $93 billion spending. It's incredible. It's absolutely incredible. We are talking about people, a government that doesn't have money for any of the things that we actually need. And when you hear the list of the things that they spent money on, it is infuriating completely. Good morning, Michelle. Michelle says, good rage at the medical systems that fail us. Even when our problems are completely predictable, morning to you, Am. Thank you, Michelle. Good morning to you as well. Yeah, I mean, case in point, right? I was just talking about how they're failing us by not providing us the things we need. Just give us health care. Good grief. Other nations have free health care. It's not like the same excuses they've been using for decades, which is, you know, it's complicated. There's nothing complicated about it. And if the excuse is that it's complicated, and that's the reason we don't have it, then I need you to recommend someone more qualified who finds this less complicated that can give us what we need, because it doesn't change what the populace wants. Just because it's hard doesn't mean we don't want it anymore. No, we need, as citizens in this place, in these United States, we need free health care. It's ridiculous. It's you know, what are you going to do? What you got here, Dibs? Oh, sorry to hear about MJ. Hope she gets better soon. Thank you. I will definitely take all these kind words back to MJ for sure. So yeah, that's what we're covering today in local and national news. But before we jump into that, there's been a couple of things that's been happening throughout the week. I'm not sure if you heard about the Live Nation situation, the Live Nation settlement. They were under investigation. Federal judge is urging. They were under investigation, and Trump halted the investigation. and went a step further. He went and got one of his people on the board for Live Nation. From what I understand, the penalty that they'll be paying is $280 million. And what they've been trying to prevent is, of course, monopolization of, you know, ticketing, venues, and the way Live Nation has just been gobbling everything up. So they were under investigation. They were trying to break up some of their holdings. Trump put a stop to that. Instead, they were asked to pay a fine of $280 million, which, for anyone that does not know, for Live Nation, that's 4 days worth of revenue. It's literally a drop in the bucket. A federal judge is urging dozens of states to settle their antitrust claims against Live Nation after the U.S. government struck a deal with the concert giant earlier this week. States aren't rushing to sign on, though. Lawyers for Live Nation told the court the odds of reaching a deal with all remaining states quickly are about zero. The case centers on Live Nation and its ticketing arm, Ticketmaster, which regulators say dominate the live concert and ticket sales industry. Federal and state officials allege the company used pressure and retaliation against venues and promoters to keep competitors out and maintain its market power. That's like, these are mob moves. Like, this is wild. Regulators say that the dominance helps drive up ticket prices and fees for fans while limiting consumer choice. Live Nation denies the allegations, arguing artists and venues, not the company, ultimately control ticket pricing and distribution, which is ludicrous. Under the federal settlement, up to half of the tickets at Live Nation amphitheaters could be sold through competing ticket marketplaces, opening the door to more competition. But with more than two dozen states still unconvinced, the broader legal fight over the concert industry's biggest player is likely to continue. I love doing stories about this, especially when MJ is here, because she was in ticketing and was dealing with all of that. But for them to say that the ticket price is ultimately controlled by artists and venues is wild. It's absolutely wild. It is 100% untrue. If it were controlled by artists and venues and they have direct contact and having direct interaction with their fans, they've been hearing this for years. These ticket prices are ridiculous. They are out of control. They're out of control. And in the conversation I had with MJ, and I think we've discussed it a little bit online before, the fraction that ends up going to the artists with these Live Nation deals, these Live Nation touring deals, come on, man. Like, who are you fooling? It's ridiculous. Let's see, got a text here. It says, universal healthcare is so difficult and complicated that only 29 of the world's 30 richest nations have been able to make it work. Hey, Bob. Exactly. Exactly. We can't be the great, like, we literally cannot be the quote unquote greatest nation in the world and not have free healthcare. It's a non-starter. Like, the, come on. Just, who are you trying to convince with that? It's not working. It's absolutely ridiculous. But yeah, this move with Live Nation doesn't surprise me. We've watched this administration basically buddy up to leaders of industry and you know, across different industries. Live Nation has been scrutinized for quite some time for this activity. And to have this particular president in place for the second time, I mean, it serves them well. I just don't like the disinformation. I don't like the propaganda of trying to put this on the artists or even trying to put this on the venues. It's wild. It's wild. So, I'm going to switch gears real quick. Something local. There was a story. Excuse me. Or should I say development? About a year ago. Maybe a year and a half. About a sneaker manufacturing hub coming to Old Town. An organization called Made in Old Town was stewarding that. That initiative is now over. We're talking after millions of dollars have been given to them. somehow, some way, they were able to just be like, hey, you know what? We gave it the old college try. Sorry to your dollars. Sorry to your belief in us that we could do this thing. And now we're going to move on to something else. So remember that flashy plan to turn Portland's Old Town into a sneaker manufacturing hub? The project was called Made in Old Town. The one that was supposed to bring footwear companies, research labs, and dozens of businesses together in one big campus. It is officially dead. Prosper Portland confirmed this week that the Made in Old Town project will not move forward. I repeat, Prosper Portland confirmed this week that Made in Old Town will not move forward. The proposal was to convert several Old Town buildings, including the Mason Ehrman building, into a hub for the footwear and apparel industry, eventually housing up to 90 companies. But here's where the flag started waving. The project received $2 million from the state of Oregon and a $7 million loan from Prosper Portland to buy two buildings. And when that deal happened, the main building had an appraised value of $3.8 million. Meaning the project paid roughly double that price using public money. We talked about that previously on some other shows, how heads need to roll. I mean, that was absolutely ridiculous. And there's been no explanation for it. Zero explanation for it, for that specifically. Now the project's leaders say it collapsed because of the economic uncertainty and tariffs affecting the footwear industry. But the warning signs were already there. The organization behind the project defaulted on the Prosper Portland loan after failing to raise $5.7 million in outside financing that they promised. There was also leadership turmoil, including their executive director, abruptly resigning after just a month, after just months on the job. And now Prosper Portland says it may end up taking ownership of the building itself. So taxpayers helped finance a development project that promised jobs, innovation, and revitalization. And what the city may end up with is just another building that we used to own. So if you're new to Portland, you might hear the name Prosper Portland and think, oh, that sounds nice. Prosperity, economic development, good things for the city. But longtime Portlanders know that Prosper Portland used to have a different name. It used to be called the Portland Development Commission. And if you grew up in Northeast Portland, like Morgan did, especially around Albina, you know exactly what that agency was famous for. Urban renewal. And in Black Portland, folks had another name for urban renewal. Negro removal. Because those projects in the 60s and 70s, the hospital expansions, the freeway construction, the redevelopment zones, they placed thousands of Black families who had already been pushed into that part of the city in the first place because of redlining. Whole neighborhoods got wiped out in the name of development. So fast forward to 2017. The Portland Development Commission rebrands itself as Prosper Portland. New name, new logo, lots of talk about equity and inclusion, inclusive economic development. But here's the thing. The basic model didn't really change. They still control huge pools of public money through urban renewal districts, which means that when property values go up in those areas, that extra tax revenue doesn't go to the schools or the general fund. It goes to development deals. And sometimes those deals work, but sometimes they look a lot like we're seeing with the sneaker project. Millions of public dollars flowing into real estate purchases, big promises about jobs and innovation. And then when the project falls apart, the city ends up holding the property. And if you've been in Portland long enough, this starts to feel like a pattern. Urban renewal displaced Black Portlanders from Albina. Public subsidies helped turn the Pearl District into luxury condos. Tens of millions have gone into redevelopment plans in places like Gateway, and still haven't delivered the transformation people were promised. And now we've got another project in Old Town that burned through public money and collapsed before it even got off the ground. So when people hear about Prosper Portland writing big checks for projects like this, the skepticism isn't coming out of nowhere. It's coming from decades of watching public money reshape this city, and not always for the people who are already here. Shout out to MJ. That was amazing writing, especially from a perspective of someone who has been in Portland and grown up in Portland their whole life. When I arrived there in 2016, my idea of what Prosper Portland was based on the revamping. And, you know, we had some really good relationships working with some folk over there. We got some really, really amazing things done at my time with the numbers. So, yeah, nothing but amazing things to say about Prosper Portland, not knowing their history. So to have that perspective, I think, was really, really amazing. And it's helpful. It's helpful in analyzing their effect on the community today. But yeah, Made in Old Town. I went and watched, as we were preparing to do this story this morning, I went and watched some of the coverage from a year ago when the big announcement was made that they were going to be creating a sneaker hub, sneaker manufacturing hub in downtown Portland. And I know what you're thinking. You're like, we have all these sneaker footwear and apparel companies here in Portland already. In areas surrounding Portland, Beaverton, we got tons of companies here, right? Nike, Adidas, Hoka. There's a bunch of companies here. Under Armour. They don't do manufacturing here in the States. It's all done overseas. What are they going to do in Old Town that's going to impact sneaker manufacturing? What are they going to bring? Well, this was all based around 3D printing. This is the sustainable manufacturing that they were selling, basically, to Prosper Portland and to the community, that they were going to be creating a sneaker hub, sneaker and apparel hub downtown that would implement 3D printing, and it would be amazing, revolutionizing everything. I don't know who actually got sold on this, but I don't know. It wouldn't have worked on me. I'm sorry. If it would not have worked on me. If I was sitting at the table, hearing this pitch, seeing this pitch deck, it wouldn't have worked. There's no way. Okay, first off, and I am not a brand whore, per se, but I've been wearing certain brands, especially on my feet. As a DJ, you wear what works, right? You definitely wear what's going to take care of your feet. And you've grown relationships with different manufacturers, different styles of shoe, different styles of shoes. I'm not chancing my feet on what sounds like, I don't know. It doesn't sound legit to me. I'm not chancing my feet and my health, my ability to stand for 3 or 4 hours while DJing. With some sneakers you guys said you pull off a 3D printer. Am I saying it's impossible? No, I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is, where was the conversation about selling this thing? Like, you sold the concept to the state. You sold the concept to the city via Prosper Portland, but where were the people involved in this conversation? Who said this is even what we want to do with these buildings downtown? They received, just from what I mentioned in this story, that's about $9 million, right? The idea was they were going to purchase, I believe, 10 buildings downtown, 8 to 10 buildings downtown for this. Who said this is what we want? Who said this is what we want our public funds to be spent on? And we know as a result of this investment, they were going to be pushing out members of our community, of our houseless community that exists downtown. There was absolutely no way there was going to be coexistence. And I know that for a fact, because one of the people on board for this has done their level best to make sure that no space is created for our houseless citizens downtown. The owner of Society Hotel, Jessie Burke. Her relationship with the houseless community, and I won't just say her, but other business owners downtown, has been very contentious. very unhelpful. So this, of course, was just another project that they could implement with city backing to do a sweep and clean the area up, you know, revitalize downtown. Oh, the term you're looking for, Scott text, the term you're looking for is vaporware. Oh, okay. Is that for, that's a sneaker tech? I might need some more information from you on that. Thank you for that text, though. But nothing about this sounded right ever to me, ever. There were some other community-based organization leaders that I was in partnership with that were early in getting the information out on Made in Old Town when they were establishing, when they were, you know, initially establishing this project and moving forward with it. They were talking to some community stakeholders. And some of the people that were in those early meetings that I have relationships with, they felt like, okay, there's a lot of great energy here, but, you know, didn't really understand what exactly they were trying to pull off. And I think to this day, we may have a better understanding in the way that they just shut down shop after spending God knows whose money on what. Well, we know it's our money, but spending it on God knows what. But this has been going on for a while, and it's been a downward trend of them honoring their commitments. I would say most recently, another community partner, nonprofit leader that I have a relationship with, was in the process of partnering with Made in Old Town for an event for Black History Month. That's what it was. It was Black History Month. And I remember saying to them, hey, I've been asking around about Made in Old Town. I don't think you want to partner with them. I feel as though you might want to take a step back, reassess, because there's a lot of negative energy in the press. I heard there's investigations going on. This is before these reports came out. I said, you might want to take a step back, and I'm glad that they did. I'm very happy that they did, because we don't need to be associated with anything like this. Not even close. Not even remotely close. It does really upset me. In some ways, I'm happy that the project has shut down, for sure. There's no way to recover this money. So it does upset me that it happened in the first place, that they were given the ability to run this, for lack of a better word, scam on us. I'm just tired of the lack of accountability, as we all are. I'm just tired of it. Leadership at Prosper Portland has changed, definitely. And I think this project ending may be part of that to a great degree. Maybe there's a changing of the guard to make sure our funds aren't being wasted. But time and time again, we're just not seeing accountability for the ways that we're being harmed. We're being denied certain services. We're being denied the level of quality of life that our downtown should have. And imagine, like, in the midst of a struggling downtown, you have an organization like this that comes together to just continue to take in broad daylight. Where are the names? Where's the accountability? Who are these folk? At what point do they answer for what they've done? It's, you know, absolutely wild. But yeah, what else do we have for the up top? There's been conversations about the Target boycott being over. It isn't. We still don't mess with y'all. There was a press conference yesterday with Nina Turner, Tamika Mallory. What is the brother's name? Jamal Bryant, I believe. I could double check that. And it happened along the same time that USA Today did an interview with a community organizer that was leading a portion of the protests. And it's throughout this interview, the conclusions that he conceded, and, you know, we've moved on. They've been having conversations with Target. And, you know, the boycott's over. I'll let you know right now. I haven't been in Target in God knows how long. Definitely not going back. Before jumping into that story, though, got a text from Michelle. Says, it's so infuriating. Why do the economic development types get held in the same, held to the same standards as a high school group project? While any endeavor to actually help people or anyone actually trying to help themselves has to jump through every hoop imaginable. And that's true. Like, that's dead on. Super accurate. That money, if you want to revitalize Old Town and you want to, I don't know, make Old Town great again, there are so many other places that money could have went to. So many other. And yeah, they're not being held to the standards they should, Michelle. I 100% agree. And that's on the front end, right? But the lack of penalty and the lack of consequence on the back end, for me, is what keeps this door revolving. No one's hands are ever getting slapped for this type of activity. So what's to prevent the next grifter from showing up? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. And it's not like there isn't like a line of grifters constantly going at our funds, constantly trying to get contracts, trying to figure things out to siphon from city funds. Some of them get yeses, low yeses that we'll never hear about. Maybe a great majority of them get no's because they don't have the relationships, right? But once you get that yes, and you have this public declaration of what we're going to get done, there's no shame. There's no shame in this at all. None. And then from our civic leaders, there's no penalties. There's no consequences. You're listening to X-Ray FM at KXRY Portland at 91.1 and 107.1 FM and in Nehalem, Wheeler, Manzanita, and Rockaway Beach at 91.7 FM, streaming online everywhere at xray.fm. I'm going to go ahead and jump into a music break and come back with a little more news. Welcome back to News of My Fiance with Morgan Jones and DJ Ambush right here on X-Ray FM. Shoot us a text. Join the conversation. Hit us at 971-220-5979. Again, that is 971-220-5979. Man, enjoy the silence by Depeche Mode. Whew. Banger. Banger, 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 banger. I love that song so much. And a Santa Gold song played before that, Desperate Youth. Yeah, as a matter of fact, there is a fiance, very close fiance to the show, one Rhythm Keen, who recorded the intro, the welcome to News of My Fiance intro. We close homies, and we're homies on Threads as well. And she said, she has a rendition of this song that's very, very soulful. I'm going to attempt to get it recorded so I can play it. She's never going to do it willingly. It's going to take a lot of arm twisting, verbal arm twisting. But I'm going to try to make that happen. Catching up on some text here. Let's see. Where is it? Talking about healthcare earlier, someone said, to put it in perspective, we can go to the moon, but we can't have healthcare. Come on now. Hope MJ feels better. Thank you for that text. And yeah, man, we can go to the moon multiple times. And I bet you, whoever is in that first wave of people that are colonizing the moon, you think they're going to have free healthcare? What's the over and under on the moon inhabitants having free healthcare before we get it down here in the U.S.? My goodness. Billy Joe, hey Ambush, good conversation on your take on local issues. Hope to visit with Morgan and you at the 20th anniversary of X-Ray. Not riding my bike today, but still going to my activities. Have a better day, MJ. MJ, come on, man. You're getting the love. You're getting the love. Unfortunately, I missed a text from MJ a little bit earlier when we were talking about Maiden Old Town. She said, is this the waste, fraud, and abuse they were talking about? I believe so. I believe that's a very, very good example of waste, fraud, and abuse. She also said, though these aren't migraine-friendly songs or topics, played softly, both your voice and music are soothing. P.S. Hi, fiancés. I miss y'all. Oh, I'm glad it's soothing. I'm really glad it's soothing. And now you know that rhythm is the catalyst for why you just heard Enjoy the Silence. All right. Okay. I think we're all caught up on text. We should be. We're going to jump into... Let's jump into the national story first. So I mentioned, again, waste, fraud, and abuse. It's the theme for two-thirds of the show today. Watchdog report scrutinizes Pentagon's $93 billion year-end spending surge. A government watchdog report is drawing scrutiny to a massive year-end spending surge by the United States Department of Defense, which obligated $93.4 billion in grants and contracts last month. Nearly half of the total was spent during the final five business days of the fiscal year. I'm going to repeat that again. Nearly half of $93.4 billion was spent during the final five business days of the fiscal year. A pattern critics reflects a longstanding use it or lose it budgeting practice that encourages agencies to exhaust funds before Congress reduces future allocations. Procurement records reviewed by the Watchdog Group opened the books show a wide array of purchases during the September spending rush. The items included seafood and steak purchases such as lobster tail, ribeye, and Alaskan king crab, along with 272 separate donut orders. The department also purchased technology products, furniture, and even musical instruments, including a grand piano and other high-end equipment. Some expenditures attracted particular attention from lawmakers. According to the Watchdog report, the Pentagon spent more than $225 million on furniture in September alone, the highest amount recorded since 2014. The spending also included $12,000 fruit basket stands and more than $60,000 worth of premium office chairs. Other purchases included a $98,000 Steinway & Sons grand piano, a $26,000 violin, and a $21,000 handcrafted Japanese flute as part of roughly $1.8 million spent on instruments. I'm going to need someone to explain that to me. Is there anyone listening? Performing musician that can explain why our government would be spending $1.8 million on instruments? Is it the White House band? I don't understand how. The report comes as Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth faces pressure over Pentagon spending priorities amid rising global tensions. Analysts note that the department is also facing growing operational costs tied to military operations abroad, including the Trump administration's ongoing conflict with Iran. The Center for Strategic and International Studies estimates the first 100 hours of the campaign, known as Operation Epic Fury, cost taxpayers about $900 million per day. That's us, you guys. We're taxpayers. Watchdog officials say the end of the year surge highlights systemic problems with federal procurement rules. John Hart, CEO of Open the Books, called the $93.4 billion spending spike unacceptable, arguing that the Pentagon should focus resources on defense readiness rather than luxury purchases. The American taxpayers expect their dollars to support critical defense priorities, not lavish dinners, Hart said in the statement. That brings up a really good point, but I'm going to finish reading the story, then I'll come back around to it. The spending has also prompted criticism from members of Congress, including Joni Ernst, a Republican senator from Iowa. Ernst said the findings show the government must better justify defense expenditures, especially as former President Donald Trump has proposed raising, I don't know if I said former, President Donald Trump proposed raising the Pentagon's budget to $1.5 trillion by 2027. Ernst has introduced legislation known as the Receipts Act, which would require the Pentagon to achieve a clean audit by 2028 and curb what she described as a Christmas in September spending spree across federal agencies. Budget experts say the annual spending spike has been documented for years. Procurement data suggests certain categories, particularly furniture, can surge dramatically at the end of the fiscal year, with some analysis showing increases of more than 500% compared to earlier months. The pattern has fueled ongoing debates in Congress over federal budget rules and whether reforms are needed to discourage agencies from rushing to spend remaining funds before deadlines. Here's the thing. At least one of the things. How many of y'all knew that? How many of y'all knew that these guys were blowing money left and right? They're constantly looking for an increase of the budget. There's never enough. We never have enough bombs. We never have enough missiles. We never have enough personnel. We always need to increase the defense budget. $93 billion, half of which was spent in the last 5 days of the of their fiscal year. Why are you buying furniture? If we need more tanks, we need more missiles, all the things that you say we need, why are we buying furniture? What exactly is happening? Now, here's the thing. Hegseth is in charge right now of the Department of War, as laughable as that sounds. But he isn't the problem. He's just the person currently sitting in the driver's seat of that BS. When we saw that they spent, I wish I could find the other breakdown because it spoke exactly how much they spent on lobster and crab and steaks. But I don't know if we covered this a couple Thursdays ago or whether it was a Monday night, but there's a gentleman I follow on social media who served 15 years in the Navy and said that when they were going to be deployed, an indicator of that was that they would serve the troops surf and turf. He was on his way from a deployment, on his way back home, and they were served surf and turf, and they turned that boat right back around, sent them right back out there. So when we see they spent millions, it was like $6 million on crab and lobster and something similar on steak. It was like, okay, so you guys were preparing these troops. You were prepared to send these troops somewhere at some point. And here we are now, war with Iran. The waste and abuse is... I can't properly fathom it. I really, really can't. Billy Joe says, I'm definitely not defending this administration, but my son, who is a corporal in the Marines, has told me that when the service members going into battle or threatening situations are served steak and lobster. Yeah. Yes. Thank you for that confirmation, Billy Joe. Thank you so much. That was one of the line items, again, that caught our attention immediately when the story broke. That when they're about to send them out, they hook them up with some surf and turf. Huge line item in this spending. I wish I don't need $6 million in lobster, but you know, that Batmobile is waiting for me out there, and it don't cost $6 million. You're trying to spend some money, Hegseth? How's your boy? AJ said, the furniture is probably for detention centers or something equally evil. Yes. Good morning, AJ. Yeah. And yes, she said, then that seafood is definitely for soldiers as a goodbye meal. Oh, boy. Yeah, that's disheartening. As a matter of fact, and I think it was a couple Thursdays ago, we talked about this on the air. I couldn't imagine, you know, having experienced that as a service member, getting that surf and turf before we send you into mayhem time and time again. And then you come home and you're like, oh, let's go to Applebee's or, you know, Sizzler. Are there Sizzlers around still? Let's go to Apple. Let's go to Sizzler. Let's get some surf and turf. What? Keep it away from me. Keep both your surfs and your turfs away from me. I don't want any of it. That's got to be triggering. Good morning, C's. Says Ambush, working where I do, I was aware. It happens all across the government. Yikes. The problem is, if you don't spend it, you lose it. And you reset the table of need at what you spent that year. So in order to set the budget minimally at the same number or more, they have to unload by October 1st every year. Okay. It's a flaw in the system, kind of like no term limits. Agreed. Okay. So I get that. You know, I get that. I've heard the same thing about marketing budgets within the entertainment biz. You know, hey, we gotta burn through these funds by the end of the fiscal year. They'll green light videos. They'll green light, you know, campaigns for projects. And I get that. I definitely understand that, especially when you're in a part of the government that's always seeking an increase in funding. You want to be able to prove that, yeah, we need the money. Look, we burned through it. We just didn't have enough last fiscal year. You got to increase us. But this, you're the Pentagon. Again, there are so many things that you could be spending money on. So many. Burning through that amount in 5 days is off the chain. They said this spending, they haven't seen spending like this since 2014. Since 2014. Okay, we got another text. As a musician, I'd prefer they bought instruments rather than bombs and killing machines. Thank you, Dustin. You know what? I am not mad at that, Dustin. I am not mad. Get everybody, as a DJ, get everybody controllers and a membership to Serato. I don't know. I would much rather they do that. Yes, I agree. But I was just saying, you're the Pentagon. Why not spend money in ways that make sense for the people that you're trying to convince? You need an increase in your budget. I'm trying to remember. I believe it was during the Biden administration, where there was an audit that may have started before Biden's administration, but there was an audit that took place on the Pentagon. And it was to the sum of like $2 or $3 trillion unaccounted for. $2 or $3 trillion. That is a whole lot of money. That's a whole lot of money. And it's like we were saying earlier, like I was saying earlier in the show. And then it just was, hey, unaccounted for. Man, let's try to let that happen again. And we just moved on. Can do that. Who can do that at anyone's job? If you're a cashier and $30 goes missing, you're at least going to get a write-up. Some of these places might just fire you outright. $2 or $3 trillion of American taxpayer money just disappeared like a up-close magic trick? Like, what are we doing? Again, the accountability. Where is it? I can't find it. It is gone. Not a fan. Oh, man. Thank you for all the texts. You are, listen, again, you know how difficult it can be on these solo shows. So to have you guys as my, I have a list of fiancés as my co-hosts today. Love it. Absolutely love it. Thank you so much. Let me see. I think we're caught up there. But yeah, this is tough for me. This is tough for me. It adds to the, to Dustin's point, it adds to the despair that we are at war right now and that we are funding a genocide. It adds to the despair that while that's happening, simultaneously, back here at home, we are just wasting money. Wasting money. As if we don't have problems that could be solved with those funds. It's no different than what's happened here in Portland with that $106 million that appeared that was supposed to be spent on homeless services in the houseless community, housing. And now they're talking about trying to reallocate those funds as if the housing crisis is over. And that money is earmarked for that initiative specifically. No different than the money that the Pentagon had. It's not like they had to spend the money on something other than armaments or what they normally convince us they need more of. This is just the Pentagon's budget. They could have spent this on consultants. They could have spent this on anything. But that's what we got. That's what we got. All right. Gonna jump into another music break and then come back with our local story. Thank you guys again. Thank you so much for tuning in. And let's see what we're gonna throw on. Yeah. All right. Yeah, this works. Catch you right after this music break. Welcome back to News of My Fiance with Morgan Jones and DJ Ambush. I am flying solo today. MJ is out with the migraineiest of migraines. Sucks. It's so bad. But join the conversation. Shoot us a text at 971-220-5979. Again, that is 971-220-5979. Shout out to P-Town. We miss you. Fiance, we're going to figure this out. I don't understand what's going on, why you can't text in, and I've been trying to solve it every time I've been in here, but we're going to figure it out. We're going to figure that out. So you got a couple texts. Dib said, ironic how people voted for Trump because he'll run the country like a business. WTF. Yeah. How about that? This is what you voted for, which again, just that whole vibe. I don't know if you guys caught this a couple of months ago, actually. Andrew Schultz was like, this isn't what I voted for. This isn't what Trump's doing now. Isn't what I voted for. I'm not shooting you any bail. I don't care. If you genuinely, honestly feel like you've been duped, that's one thing. That is one thing, and that's real, sure. But at the same time, the things that attracted you to voting for this man were all selfish things. All of it. So please don't come back to the public looking for, you know, someone to lay a James Brown cape on you while you buy that. No one cares. It's not happening. Absolutely not. Dib said also MF and Cameo make it a longer break and play a Houdini track. Oh my gosh. If I'd follow that up with some Houdini, yeah, 25 minutes of the show. Bit of music. Easily. Throwing some Fela. So it's funny that you said that, Dib. That's actually a little, you know, DJ trick of ours. We need to, if you're doing an event, got to run in the bathroom, put a house remix of something that people are familiar with on. Boom, throw that on. Anything from Fela. Boom, throw that on. You know, something like this. Strange from Cameo. It's a 7-minute song. And I'm going to tell you the truth, guys. I didn't realize it was a 7-minute version when I started it. I probably would have played 2 songs and ended up taking them 7 minutes of the show anyway. But, you know, it was good. We went down memory lane. It was great. It was absolutely great. But yeah, that's a little DJ trick. It's a little DJ trick. Shout out to all the DJs that I've been interacting with and some of the DJ discussions that have been happening on Threads. I am in no way wanting to give Meta a shout out, but the algorithm curation on Threads has been top tier. And you know what? It's set on my activity, so I'm shutting myself out. You know, I curated this, my experience, thanking me. So anyways, there's been a lot of discussions online, DJ-related discussions online, one of which was about requests. And shout out to the homie Carmen. But someone had asked, what is it with DJs? Why don't they take requests? And I'm sure you can imagine there's a myriad of reasons, right? This person is requesting a song that they want to dance to while the rest of the club is already dancing. The DJ's doing their job and everything is right. The atmosphere, there's already a party going on. So it's kind of wild for you to come up and say, hey, let me cut through all these people that are having a great time on a dance floor, make my way to the DJ booth and be like, hey, you know that one song? Could you play that? And I'm not lying to you. This is how it happened, you guys. What song are you talking about? I can't remember the artist. Okay. But it goes like, are you serious? Are you serious? Are you actually having a serious moment with me? You want me to listen to you sing a very poor rendition of whatever song you can't remember the name of, while also on my job with headphones on, listening to what I'm going to play next? And paying attention to the crowd. That's what you want to happen? I'd like to blame it on the alcohol. Another great song. But these are people. This happens a lot sober. I had someone come up to me at White Owl last Friday. Shout out to DJ 8 Flat. An amazing DJ. He pulls me in for gigs at White Owl. I had someone come to me and... I don't know, guys, if you can't, for whatever reason, heed, you know, my, I don't say a warning, but heed my advice as a DJ that's been DJing for over 30 years. And you still like, I don't know, you still got this burning desire to make a song request. Please don't come behind the booth. Please. Please don't come into our space to do it. That is weird. That energy is not a good, it feels icky. It feels bad. And if you can't get to us from the front or the side, then you know what? Maybe hold that request. Maybe table that for a different DJ or a different environment. But this woman came up to me. So when I DJ with 8 Flat, majority of the time it is world music, Caribbean music, Afrobeat, Nigerian high life, ballet funk. Like we are, it's party time. It is party time. It's 112 BPMs and up. And that's the vibe for the night. You understand that coming in. So woman comes behind the DJ booth. So already I'm like, okay, all right. You feel as though you had the right to my space. What exactly can I help you with? And she said, can I make a request? I said, well, it's an international theme tonight. We're playing da-da-da-da-da, music like this all night. And she said, okay, well, I was just looking for something for us to twerk to. If you have the ability to twerk, you can twerk to anything. It's just go out there and just get your twerk on. If you're looking for a twerk anthem, I'm sorry. You can play that in your car when you get back outside. International music. That's what we're playing right now. Like, no. So she said, I'm looking for something to twerk to. I said, oh, okay. I'm not switching my format for you. And she was like, so then I throw it back around. What did you have in mind? Having some fun. I, you know, jump into my customer service skills. So what can I help you with? What do you have in mind? As I've already said, this is what we're doing tonight. She says, you know, I don't really know. And then leans forward and says, what do you have in your playlist? Hey, yo. If you don't get away from me right now, if you don't get away from my laptop immediately, go away. What do I have in my playlist? So going back to the post on Threads, it said, why don't DJs take requests? Let me explain something to you. This is how I spin. And a great, I want to say this is true of the majority of DJs that I've spun with. You're at the club. You walk in. You hear music playing. You hear a particular song playing. Right? You hear a song playing. So they're going to say that's song number one that you're engaging with. What's going on in the DJ's headphones is song number two, which is the song you're going to hear next. So we've already secured the next song. Once the second song is secured, we're already looking for the third song. At any given moment, we are three songs ahead. First song's playing, second song is on the second deck, about to be played next, and now we're looking for the song that we're going to play after that. So imagine we're this far ahead in what we're doing, and you come up, not knowing where we're going to be two songs later, and you want to make a suggestion to the person that is getting paid by the venue to do their job. I compared it to going to a restaurant and dipping your head in the kitchen and telling the chef how you want your food, how you want them to make your food. Could you add a little of this to the menu? I haven't seen this on the menu, but if you could add this and also make it this way, that'd be great. Yeah. Wild, wild business. But thank you so much for that, Dibs. Yeah. Okay. Let's get to local news. Records reveal labor leaders behind the scenes role in Portland City Council leadership fight. Newly obtained public records suggest a prominent labor leader played a behind-the-scenes role during a contentious vote earlier this year to select the president of the Portland City Council. Messages reviewed by the Portland Mercury show that Laurie Wimmer, executive secretary treasurer of the Northwest Oregon Labor Union, advised allies on strategies that could have allowed then-council president Alana Purdy-Guinney to retain the position after a deadlocked vote. During the January vote, Councilor Loretta Smith proposed using council office funds to seek a court ruling on whether the mayor could break a tie in the council president election. The proposal would have challenged a legal interpretation from City Attorney Robert Taylor, who wrote in the 2025 memo that the mayor cannot cast a tie-breaking vote because the mayor is not a member of the council. Smith said at the time that a declaratory judgment from a judge could clarify the city charter and prevent repeated stalemates. Records indicate that the legal strategy was discussed privately before the vote in a text message sent the morning of January 14th. Wimmer told Guinea that morning that Misha Isaac believed the charter allowed the mayor to break ties on council matters, and that Taylor's interpretation may have been incorrect. According to the message, Isaac outlined two potential paths: reversing language in city code or seeking a court declaration. Wimmer suggested that pursuing the latter option could delay the vote and allow Purdy-Guinney to keep the position for a whole nother year. Despite those discussions, the council ultimately elected Jamie Dunphy, friend of the show, as council president later that day. Wimmer publicly distanced herself from the decision-making process after the vote, telling reporters she was merely observing the proceedings. However, records show she communicated frequently with several counselors during the leadership battle, sometimes sending messages to their personal phones rather than city-issued devices. The messages also reveal political tensions inside the newly structured city government, including a divide between progressive councilors, sometimes referred to as a Peacock Caucus, and more moderate members in the In exchanges with councilors such as Steve Novick, Eric Zimmerman, Wimmer discussed strategies and expressed frustrations over claims that race influenced the leadership fight. In other messages, she encouraged officials to distinguish between legitimate policy disagreements and accusations of race-based opposition. Wimmer has long been seen as a prominent figure in Oregon politics, previously working more than two decades as a lobbyist for the Oregon Education Association and helping advance the 2019 Student Success Act. She was elected in 2023 to lead the Northwest Oregon Labor Union, which is affiliated with the AFL-CIO. She also recently joined a city financial work group focused on budget stabilization, alongside officials including Councilors Mitch Green and Eric Zimmerman. The communications raise broader questions about transparency and influence under Portland's new government system. City lobbying rules require individuals who spend significant time attempting to influence public officials to register and report their activity. But Wimmer's lobbyist registration expired the start of 2026 and had not been renewed at the time of publication. The records reviewed also show that some council discussions occurred on private devices, which under Oregon law remain under the control of the elected officials who decide what communications to disclose and public record requests. Yay! Yay! Same old, same old. Yay, lobbyists playing with our civic leaders. This is so awesome. Okay, so now that it's out, right? Like I mentioned earlier, we went through this with some developers and real estate and development folks trying to influence Dan Ryan. And let me rephrase that. They've significantly influenced Dan Ryan. Dan Ryan is compromised. Let's just keep it a bean. Dan Ryan's compromised. The texts that are taking place during these city council meetings are wild. And the current structure that we have for city council is what the people elected, what the people voted for. This is what we want. Despite having a structure we want, we still have people in places of power in this city, behind the scenes, that want to circumvent what the people want, what we want, what we voted for, in order to maintain control and balance for them. There's no way, there's no place, there should be no circumstance under which these people should feel safe to continue doing what they're doing. No way, no how. Again, going back to the Maiden Old Town situation, where is the accountability? We have names of the city councilors that are compromised. We have names of the name of the neighbor, labor leader looking to press buttons. How on earth are we supposed to have any trust, any faith in what's happening at City Hall if things like this just keep going on? This has been a rough year so far. This has been a really rough year. Looking at city council. From the previous text messages, the racism-laden previous text messages that went to Dan Ryan, there's an indication here there's a degree of racism at play here from Wimmer. Right? We have Loretta Smith's response to protesters coming in the round at City Hall exercising their First Amendment right, she wants to respond with her Second Amendment right. They should be able to carry, our city council should be able to carry firearms inside city council. Like, what are we doing? And then, you know, icing on the cake, $106 million housing dollars. What I would love to see from other city councilors that aren't involved in this type of tawdry behavior, push for accountability. Because when you don't, you all start to look the same. It's the same thing I say about police, and I've said this for God knows how long. Something horrific happens at the hands of police in Utah. The police here in Portland will say, hey, we're not Utah. But you also won't speak on what happened in Utah. If you can't hold each other accountable, what trust do you expect the public to have in you? And I mean, 100%, I'm talking to our city council. If you cannot push to hold each other accountable, what do you think that does to public trust in the whole body? I came across this story because, shout out to Candace. Candace Avalos had posted it on Instagram. That's how I came across the story. And the Mercury covered it. But why isn't this all over local news? Why aren't we having more conversations about these institutions, these organizations, these people operating behind the scenes that are constantly trying to impose their will on our public officials and very directly impacting us? I don't get it. I don't get it. I don't like it. I'm not a fan of it. I don't like it. I don't get it. Mm-mm. It's no good. It's no good. Absolutely no good. I don't know. I feel like I'm requesting something that's not real. I'm requesting accountability. It's just not real. Can't find it anywhere. It's like we're all out. I blame the tariffs. We import accountability. What is happening here? It does disturb me to see certain council members' names repeatedly coming up. It's worrisome. And I'm not even sure what the accountability looks like. I'm sure there's someone out there that knows what could be done, what should be done, what the mechanisms are that are in place, what lever should be pulled. But public condemnation of your colleagues, I mean, that'd be a good place to start. That'd be a good place to start. Again, like I said, I came across this because Candace posted it, so that's awesome. But if we don't constantly push back against fraud, abuse, the type of politics that rob us from our ability to actually affect our quality of life, if we don't constantly push back against that, we're submitting to it. We're saying it's okay. And in doing that, we're inviting more. That's it. We're inviting more of the mayhem. And I think, this is my humble opinion, I think we have enough mayhem. I don't think we need to invite any more of it. I think there are people waiting in the wings to be able to pull another scam on us. And as Portlanders, as U.S. citizens, we got to find effective ways to hold our civic leaders accountable. We have to. Otherwise, we're just along for the ride. And I do not believe that's the position that we want to be in, especially looking at leadership right now. No, not at all. Not at all. So hopefully, fingers crossed, this story will continue to illuminate this. Stories like this will continue to illuminate the issues that we're having and have had for quite some time. Part of the new structuring for city council was to be able to, I guess, kind of mitigate some of this. And I hope we don't revert back to the old ways. It's going to be rough again during this transition into this new form of government. But we got to persevere. We have to. And we have to show those that have been used to having their thumb on our politicians and are used to having access to whatever they want. We got to show them that, nah, we're not doing that. It can seem unsurmountable, especially when you look at what's happening at the federal level, right? Major tech companies and other industries, whether it's agricultural, whether it's big pharma, big oil, whatever, watching them do whatever they want in Washington. At some point, you're just like, yeah, it's just, you know, it's just what's happening. But we have play here. We have access here. We can do things here at the local level. We can push forward the change that we want. And I know every day everyone's fighting through just what it takes to put food on the table and keep the lights on and keep gas in the tank. I know that. We're all very familiar with that. And on top of that, we don't got no healthcare. But we have to coalesce. We have to come together. And if anything, just make it clear. We want accountability. We want accountability. We want consequences. You're listening to X-Ray FM at KXRY Portland at 91.1 and 107.1 FM. And in the Halem, Wheeler, Manzanita, Rockaway Beach at 91.7 FM. Streaming online everywhere at xray.fm. Yeah, we got to make that clear. And it can't just be when it's time to vote. Because sure, we're putting the right people, or we're putting the people that we want in these places, right? But we need to have their back. Are we creating an atmosphere and a culture that allows them to push our agendas forward? Or are we throwing them to the wolves when we elect them to these positions? I echoed a similar sentiment with the Jasmine Crockett, James Tallarico situation, the race in Texas. As much as I would love to see a black woman in a position of power, I am not delusional in any way to understand how racist and how sexist and how real misogynoir is. What are we doing to change that? We want to push people forward. We want to make them champions of our issues and our policies. We want them to be able to lead the guard. Go ahead. I voted for you. Now go make it happen. But what have we done to pave the road for them to give us the change that we want? If we're not playing our part outside of the voting booth, we got to measure our expectations. So it's time to step up. It's time to step up, you guys. It's time to, especially again, on the local level, we got to have more conversations. When things like this happen, it's great to be able to commiserate on the air and, you know, on text messages and also in on social media. But it's got to be more of us at these city council meetings. Your fiance included. I think I've been in one last year. But there's got to be more of us there. We got to join the fight. I want to thank you guys for tuning in. Thank you again for joining us for another episode of News of My Fiance. Shout out, huge shout out to MJ that couldn't be with us this morning because of the barometric pressure triggering migraines across the Western seaboard right now. And also because we don't have free healthcare. Something I guess probably would have been, you know, able to be mitigated. So shout out to Morgan Jones. Another news of my fiance. Shout out to our podcast editor, Kyle G of Residual Audio. Kyle will make sure all the texts are added to the description. Again, thank you guys so much. Thank you guys so much for helping me carry the show today. Updating the playlist. And we are working on a way to get that playlist public for you guys, but we'll have to make sure it's listed. And you know the deal. Don't let the individuals distract you from the systems. Poverty is indeed a policy choice. People over profits, power to the people. None of us are free until we are all free. Thank you so much for listening. Stay tuned for Tom Hartman. And we will catch you Monday night on the YouTubes, 6:30 to 8:30. All right, y'all. Goodbye.